Welcome to the Beyond the Bucket Show, a podcast centered around optimizing all life's buckets. We all have buckets we are balancing: coaching, entrepreneurial ventures, family, passion projects, and health. Let's all take this journey together and become bucket fillers. And here's your host, Chris McSwain.
Welcome back to another fabulous episode of Beyond the Buckets here. I have the pleasure of having one of the best coaches in California on this podcast right now. And it is not a basketball coach. It is a football coach. He is the head coach of Archbishop Reardon. I call him the Coach Prime of high school. He doesn't know that I call him that yet, but I'm so excited to have Coach Adir. Welcome to the program.
Hey, I guess I gotta get a nice little Prime shirt. It's personal. I gotta start getting some of my branding. So, but no, Chris, I appreciate you having me on, man. Been a big fan of the podcast and just love what you do and what you're about. And likewise, man, feelings mutual and what you do for these kids and the community and everything. So I'm definitely excited to get a chance to talk with you too myself.
So we'll dive into everything. But first, I just want to know a fun fact about yourself. So even if somebody knew you, what is a fun fact that they might not even know?
Oh, that is a good one. Fun fact about me. This is a random one. It's probably because I was a Harker kid, but yeah. I actually used to write poetry in high school.
Really?
Random. Okay. Yeah. No, we started doing it in like middle school at Harker. And so we'd submit them for contests and all types of random stuff. So,
was it poetry or rap bars?
No, poetry, definitely poetry.
Okay.
So, yeah. No, I don't got bars like that. I leave that to the kids. So
that's interesting. Okay. So who's your favorite poet then?
I don't know if I have a favorite one, to be honest. I definitely kind of picked up a bunch of like random different sources, like whether it was like stuff we were reading in school or, random things that like I would just see out there on the internet and stuff. I also had some like mentors of mine that like literally would do it as like stress relief or the way for them to outlet emotions and stuff. So, it was kind of like a cool random thing. As I've gotten older, I actually just kind of like appreciate it when I see it, whether it's like, you know, something where I'm out or, something that I read randomly. But I think it's cool, just like means of expression. And you've kind of seen it start to overlap into like, you know, music. And, you know, it's kind of like how honestly, like I started to appreciate more of like lyrical content and music and stuff as I got older. So,
remind me, there, it starts with an S, I believe, but every other line rhymes or every fourth line rhymes. I don't know what it's talking about. I sound like an idiot, but
both, man.
You know what? But you know what I'm talking about, though?
Yeah. There's a whole bunch of things. Like when you start getting into it, this is like more when I was in high school. But there's a whole bunch of different things, like the sonnets and all that stuff, like different styles of poetry and stuff like that. So that's a random one. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that is our first poet on the Beyond the Buckets podcast. So, listeners.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't call myself a poet. too liberal with it. What's yours though? I'm curious. I'm always interested.
Oh man, I have a lot. One, I'm a neat freak. So, everything is like so put together. My room, like if my kids go in and ruin something, I'm like, what did you do? What did you touch? So I know that from jump. It's my college roommates used to kind of play pranks on me and kind of move my shoes around. As you know, I'm a shoe guy. So, you know, they put them all over the place. So that one for sure. The other one I've always said on the podcast, I used to tell people I was allergic, but I still am. I'm afraid of cats. So, back in the day, my dad was kind of like anxious around cats. And I think that habituated to my nature of not liking cats. And so I'm really afraid of cats. And the first time I met my wife's family, so this is almost 14 years ago now, go out and meet them and getting ready to have dinner and stuff like that. And all of a sudden this cat comes rolling down the hallway. And so I'm a little anxious, but you know that cats feel that energy, even though my favorite animal is a lion. I'm fine with lions, big cats, but small cats I just don't like. So this cat comes, name is Miley. She starts, or Minley, sorry, if my wife listens. She only listens like every 10th podcast, but Minley comes walking down And all of a sudden, like, I jump up on the couch and they were like, wow. I mean, after they told my wife, they're like, he's a great guy, but that cat thing is a little weird. So yeah, that's a fun fact about me. And now everybody knows
I'm afraid of a lion, but if a little cat walks in,
Yeah. If you put me in a room full of 10 cats, like I'm just probably going to end it right there. I don't know. Some people don't like snakes. Some people don't like balloons, but for me, it's just the cats.
Yeah. That's an interesting one. I'm always curious. You always hear coaches have their own like random superstitions or things they're afraid of and stuff. So
yeah,
I always think it's funny too, because like the kids always view us as like these authority figures that are like not afraid of anything or just about sports. So it's always interesting seeing the other side of people.
The biggest trip for me is you could probably say this about some of your former teams, but they'll come back and coach, do you remember when you said this? And I'd be like, no, I don't remember any of that. Or the thing that you would never even think about that resonated with them is the thing that actually resonates with them. It's wild.
Yeah. I used to do this thing, mess around with some of our kids. Actually, I got it from, Jim Harbaugh was our coach at USD. So he used to always just say crazy things like, I've never been sick a day in my life. Or like, I've never like been injured ever, like, you know, stuff that we blatantly know is not true, but he would just say it. It was like,
yeah.
So I would do that to the kids. So like, I wear like, you know, it'd be like 90 degrees out and I'd have like a hoodie on.
Oh, for sure.
Or like, you know, sweats or something. And I'd be like, yeah, I never been hot a day in my life.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that. I was wearing we're taping this early October, but I was wearing a long sleeve for my PE kids today. Cause like, I'm just not going to be hot. It actually makes you cooler though.
Yeah.
People don't realize that, but if you watch like all the NFL guys during camp, they're all the whiteouts and everybody, they're all rocking long sleeves because it basically like kind of like, you know, a little bit of shade, you know?
Yeah. But I just, you know, I'll mess with the kids and they'll come back and they'll start saying it to me. And I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot I said that to you.
Yeah, I love that.
I'm like sweating, you know, with all the layers on.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And then the other trick is like you wear an undershirt with it, like a mesh undershirt, and then you can rock a long sleeve and you'll be a little bit cooler too. So anyway, enough about shirts. Why don't you give us like a 3-minute backstory on you? Cause there's a lot of stuff that I want to get to, but we got to know who you are before we even get to where you're at.
Yeah, no, I got a kind of an interesting story even getting into coaching. So I mentioned earlier, I went to Harker, so small private school. I actually ended up playing 5 sports in high school. I did 4 in the same year, my junior and senior year. So I did football, baseball, basketball, volleyball, and track. Ended up going to college, played at University of San Diego for 2 years, transferred to Northeastern, finished playing there, played a little bit of hoop for 1 year in college.
And for those that don't know, you played receiver, right?
Played receiver, yeah. And then ended up moving back home, and I was a biochem major in college. Initially wanted to go to like pharmacy school or med school, and was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, because I didn't, you know, I kind of realized that wasn't for me, and moved back home. And you know, the head coach at MA, who had just gotten the job, Sione Taufu, called me and asked if I'd be interested in coaching. And me and his younger brother Matthew were really good friends from training at the Rikers Center together. And I was like, you know what? I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing. So I'll do it for a year. Right. And I tell you, Chris, like I just fell in love with it. You know, it was like one of those things where I literally thought I was going to do it for a year and then like go work for a little bit, get an MBA, kind of do what like every Harker kid did or everyone in the Bay Area does. Right. And just seeing the impact and how the kids, like I always knew like the impact my coaches had on me, but seeing how the kids gravitated towards me, the way that they viewed me, listened to me, the way the parents even talked about how they listen to me and take the words to heart. And I mean, I'm 22 years old. Like I don't have anything figured out at this point. Right. And just seeing that type of impact, and especially like the East Palo Alto community, being a public school and having an opportunity to work with those kids and seeing, you know, these kids are just as smart and just as talented, have the same potential as any other kid. It's just a lot of times their circumstances or their environment doesn't allow them to reach their potential. And seeing the impact that like a coach could have and helping them like really just got me all in on coaching. And, you know, I managed to be able to work my tech career. So I'm a product manager in tech. So I managed to kind of be able to double up and do both, and kind of moved up the ranks at MA, was a JV head coach, was the assistant varsity coordinator. Had part of a season where I kind of was just volunteering, helping out while I was working on a startup with one of my friends. And, you know, the head coaching job opened up at MA, and, you know, I really never wanted to be a head coach, but a lot of people kind of talked me into applying, and I thought I kind of owed it to myself and the kids to do that. And did it and was head coach for 4 years in MA. It was four amazing years. Just I love that school and that community so much.
And you can boast a little bit. I mean, in that 4 years, you did win a state title.
Yeah, no, we won three league titles, made it to two state games, won one. So definitely it was a great run. I mean, for those 4 years, made a lot of history, just, kids going to college. The thing I was most proud of, Chris, to be honest with you, is like when I took the job and we had our team GPA was like a 2.15 and we had like 70 kids in the program. You know, Sione had stepped down, and so there was this gap of time where they were looking for a coach, and kids didn't have the structure and support that they needed. And by the time I left, we were at like a 2.85 team GPA with like 140 kids in the program, and just seeing the way the kids bought into being the best version of themselves. To be honest, there's one thing I boast about. That's the thing I'm most proud of.
Sure.
Of my time at MA, and I actually stepped down because of my tech career, I just couldn't balance the two anymore, and. Then COVID happened and things went to remote work. And, I started coaching at CSM and, was kind of trying to figure out what was going to be the next step for me. You know, I started interviewing for some D1 college jobs and was thinking maybe it's, time for me to try and do that full time and see if that's something I want to do or, stay at the junior college level. And, this job at Reardon opened up and, I'll be honest with you, Chris, the first time they called me, I was like, why would I want to go to Reardon? Like, and that all boys school in the city, it's like having financial issues and stuff. I didn't really know much about the school, even though I was living in San Francisco.
Sure.
And I just, I met with the school almost as a courtesy to start and, just realized like it's a really special place, special community. A lot of people that went to the school come back and work there, which, told me that it meant a lot to them. The diversity of the school is probably one of the most diverse private schools in the Bay Area. It reminded me a lot of MA, to be honest with you. And I thought there was an opportunity for us to do something really special on the field, but more importantly, off the field to help kids in an environment that really pushes kids to be the best version of themselves. And, I managed to make that work with my tech career. So I work at Credit Karma as a product manager and, I'm the head football coach at Reardon. So it's managed to work out and, definitely took an interesting journey. I didn't think I was going to get into coaching and, balancing it, working in tech and stuff. It's kind of a unique thing, but I'm very appreciative of the people and the relationships I've been able to build along the way and make it work.
Yeah, a lot of directions I want to go. Also, like managing both of those two things, but just how we met was during COVID, and I didn't know you beforehand directly, and I don't think you knew me directly. Well, we both didn't know each other directly anyway.
Yeah,
and. You guys, you and your buddy Jason Pollock, a former receiver coach at Sac City, and he was with you at CSM and also with you your first year at Reardon. He went to high school with us, and he was talking to Giles about, doing some football stuff, and he was like, yeah, we want to join Top Flight and do some Top Flight football, and I was, and we just kind of went back and forth, and so we finally got, to start having discussions and things like that. And the most impressive thing that I thought about you was, number one, you do your homework and you're super organized, but you were like, I talked to such and such, I talked to such and such, I talked to such and such about me as a person. And that, to me, meant like a lot that you would go that direction to find out about somebody else, because I did the same thing for about you. Anybody that I knew that was in that world, hey, do you know Adir? What about him? And everybody said, oh, a stand-up guy, great guy. If you can, you guys can work together in some capacity, like you got to do it. And I mean, I remember the conversation because I was in my bedroom and the kids and the wife were out there and I was talking. I was trying to talk to you about, why don't you just do it your own? And you were talking about the family and the culture. And this is something that, like it's got a name, but like, I want to be a part of this thing. And that to me meant like, look, this is a guy that is understanding about how partnerships and relationships work. And I think that is one of the reasons why you've had success at every stop that you've had, is because you really value the relationship piece first and foremost, regardless of how good the athlete is or how bad the athlete is. It doesn't really matter. You have great relationships with parents, players, other coaches. I haven't heard anybody say one bad thing about you when it comes to you being the person that you are. So I just wanted to highlight that first and foremost, because you can't say that about a lot of people, and a lot of people are fake or phony in regards to that. And hey man, how are you? Well, let's contact each other. But you said what you were going to, you did what you were going to say, said what you were going to do, and you followed through. And then the first time that I came out to one of your football trainings, and you had a fantastic staff, like you beat me there to set up first and foremost, which never happens. You guys had everything set up. You just said, hey, we need this, we need this, we need this. We got the fields and blah, blah, blah. And you had like the best DB coach, Amari Green. You had the best O-line coach in Fred. You had the best D-line coach in Jason Hardy. You had you coaching quarterbacks. You had the best receivers coach. Like at every single position, you had the best at that skill. And to get all those people in one area, you know, definitely know how to sell, but you also are really about the community. So I just want to give you your flowers, because that professionalism has, you know, made an impact on me, but it's clearly making an impact where you're at right here, right now. So if you didn't hear from anybody else, man, my hat's off to you for how professional you have carried everything and just the name that you bring just because of the relationships that you've invested in.
Yeah. Well, first off, I'm really appreciative of that. And yeah, like I said, the feeling's mutual. I mean, I feel the same way about you, Chris. Like everyone speaks so highly of you. And I think, you know, just seeing what you've done with Top Flight and what you've done at Valley Christian, I think there's a lot of people who recognize the type of person you are. And it, you know, it's, you know, you podcast called Beyond the Buckets, but you know, I think of it, man, you know, it's the stuff that you teach and how you teach kids to play and treat one another on the court and then carry that to off the court. Right. And I think there's something to be said about working with people that share your mission, that share your drive, that share your values, that I think supersedes a lot of things. And, you know, for me, I mean, I'm sure it's probably for you too, but like that came from the coaches that I was around. And more importantly, from my parents. Like, I think my parents really instilled that in me when I was young, and just like, you know, from my family's own story and the way that, you know, we've tried to invest in other people and help other people, family and non-family. I think that's something that like is just true to like who I am at my core and the way that my parents raised me and having that service aspect of my life. That's sort of the thing that I enjoy the most about coaching. And I think you'll agree with this, Chris. Like you can very quickly in the coaching world know who's really about the kids and who's a real genuine person and who's not. And I think the kids can tell that very quickly too.
And just so I'm going to spill the beans on this. You didn't even ask to get paid. Like you made sure all your coaches got paid, and you did not, you and Jason did not even care to get paid. And we still did, because that's the right thing to do. But you guys didn't ask for that. You know, take care of them, take care of this, take care of this, take care of this. We don't want it. We don't want it. We'll wait. We'll wait. We'll wait. Like that says everything about what you just said too. And a lot of people, they're worried about that first and foremost before anything else. And look the blessings that you've had after that. Like, just think about that. You've been super, super, super blessed by just positioning yourself in a way that you're giving, giving, giving. And now you've got one of the best programs in Northern California.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. You know, we definitely got a lot of work to do, but I think in the end, like, treat people the way you want to be treated, right? And like you take care of others in the end, like things will work out for you. And I think just seeing like, and I think this is something that like we try to impart to our kids, and I'm sure you do as a coach too, of like, just if we were able to open our hearts as a society a little bit more and take care of one another a little bit more and just share a little bit more love for one another, like think about how much better off we would be just across the board, right? And I think like that's the way I try to live my life and the way that we try to get our, you know, our team culture to be that way, our school culture. And I think like when you get kids to do that or you treat people that way, they pay that forward, right? And that's the magnifying effect of doing things the right way. And, you know, again, I think that's just, I think a lot of us are like that in the coaching business, right? I mean, you know, I think there's a lot of people who are in this for that selfless reason of wanting to help and give back to kids. And that was the whole reason why we even started that whole thing. I mean, you know, when we first reached out, it was like, you know, I just didn't really think there were a lot of kids that were getting quality coaching from people who are investing in them and building the right environment around them to learn and grow in the right culture. And, you know, it's not a knock on trainers that are out there, but I feel like there's a lot of people that are out there that, don't know how to do that the right way. And I think it has a lasting impact on the kids in a really formative time in their lives. Right. And I think, you know, that's something that's important that, you know, we give back to the next generation, the way people invested in us.
Absolutely. So tell me, obviously when Reardon called you, you were like, probably not. And then what was the sales pitch that they gave you when, they called you up and said, hey, would you like to interview for the job?
Yeah, I was a little bit rough on them, to be honest. I kind of laugh at them right now, but I mean, I had a list of questions and I'm like peppering them. One of the ADs, Jason Morris, used to be the head coach. So I'm asking him, you guys have had like 8 head coaches in 16 years. You know, you were the head coach. Like, what happened? Why did you not have success and decide to step down? Or, you know, what were the reasons? And I give him a lot of credit. I mean, he was very, very, very honest and direct with me and told me, you know, what the pluses and the minuses were, why it was a hard job, but what the upside of it was. And, you know, he's a really close friend of mine now. And, you know, Bob Green, our other AD, like those two guys are just unbelievable people, first and foremost, the AVP, Brian Kelly. So, you know, I'm talking to him and I'm seeing this like alignment and the vision for the school. The school's just gone co-ed. They have this boarding program. They've started this biomedical sciences program, honors engineering, like, you know, I literally go on a school visit and they've got this robot that they've made that's hooked up to an Xbox Kinect. So whatever the Xbox Kinect is doing, the robot's doing, and, you know, they're firing off rockets next to the school. And I'm sitting there going like, I mean, this is incredible what the school is doing academically, and just seeing the alignment from the president all the way down and just seeing the diversity of the school, the mission of the school, and just how much it's meant to so many of those families from that area. I kind of just started to, it just made me view the school really differently. Right. And I started to think about like what I value in coaching and being able to give back to kids and the environment that I want to be in and being around like-minded people, kind of what we're talking about, right? Like surrounding yourself with the right people, the relationships. I really started to feel like this was a really special opportunity. And I tell people all the time, like, I think Reardon found me at the right time in my life. And I feel like I found Reardon at the right time in its life.
Sure.
Right? And so I think it really was something that was just meant to be at the right time for both of us. So, and it's definitely something like, you know, I don't know about you, Chris, you're kind of, I was sort of the flip of you. I went to a private high school and then went and coached at a public school. You went to a public school and coached at a private school, but that's a totally different environment. So for me, I was like, you know, okay, it's a little bit of a leap of faith to go do something different too. And I kind of wanted to challenge myself a little bit in being in a new environment, but, you know, it was something that came together really quickly and somewhat unexpected. So, but I'd be curious, like, how has it been for you? Like, you know, obviously, like, Valley is very different than the school you went to and where you grew up, right? So,
yeah, I mean, it definitely was. And then I never coached girls prior to going to Valley. Yeah. So I would always coach boys. You know, I started off at Del Mar High School. I was there for 7 seasons and went to Monta Vista for a year. And then I was at Lee for 2 or 3 years. And it was always on the boys' side. And then this was also my first varsity job as well. So it was just a lot to begin with. And, you know, there was 2 of the captains. I just went in there the first time because similar thing. They had a couple coaches in a few years. And I just said, hey, I just need you to trust me. You don't know me from a can of paint, but I need you to trust me and I'm going to trust you. I'm going to, you know, learn alongside you. And it was the point guard and the shooting guard. And they trusted me. I'm still, I'll call them friends now because they're adults and, I know their families know my family. And, yeah, so those two really trusted me. And from there, you know, the administration had my back, similar thing. I think they kind of, it was like the right place at the right time. And I wasn't going to be the one that just kind of wanted to jump around. I wanted to, if I was going to be somewhere, I wanted to be there for a while. And this is year 11, but yeah, there was a lot of ups and downs early on. I mean, we won CCS my first year, but we, you know, we're at the bottom half of the league. We were just better than all the teams in the division. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, if I look back on it, I would say like it probably took me 4 or 5 years to really get my legs and understand, okay, this is how you coach girls and this is how you approach certain situations, because it's way different than coaching boys. So now I feel like definitely, I think it was like year five or so where I was like, all right, I feel super, super comfortable and you know, like, who I am, how I want to approach this. And then the league is intimidating. So I'm going to flip around and ask you the same question. Mm-hmm. You know, I was the youngest coach at the time when I got into the league. And now 11 years later, as far as tenure goes, I am the second longest tenured coach. You go from the very youngest coach to now the second longest tenured coach. And that comes with different responsibilities too, like trying to help people on your staff get opportunities to be varsity coaches if that's what they want to do, or you know, just what you talk about in the league meetings. What are you really thinking about when we're talking about scheduling? Is this really the best thing for us to play the same day as the guys, or should we have our own night? Stuff like that, where you just start thinking at it at such a higher scale. So, mm-hmm. It's really a lot, and I love our league. It's a great camaraderie. I'm sure you could say the same thing about the football. But what was it like for you entering last year to the WCAL when you had really no experience as other than hearing about, you know, all the teams in the league?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a good question. I think it's a challenging league. Like, that's one thing that I got, you know, speaking just to the football part real quick, like in the PAL, like usually there'll be like one or two teams that you're kind of like, okay, like, we're probably going to be all right. We probably can rotate everybody in. You know, the WCL, I mean, it's a gauntlet, right? Anybody can beat anybody any week. And really quality coaching, lots of resources supported every school, and just a ton of talent across the board. So I think that in itself is like fun, but a little bit like kind of, okay, like, hey, you know, getting a feel for me personally, the city rivalries. There is something really unique about going to a Catholic school in San Francisco, right? And like, you talk to our alums, for example, I mean, they'll tell you what grammar school they went to. They have grammar school rivalries. They grow up saying, I went to this school, so I went to this high school. And but there's something really special and inclusive that I don't feel like the other WCL schools have. Like, the city Catholic schools take a lot of pride and tradition. And like, we went to a city Catholic school, and sure, those relationships go on way past when they graduate and, you know, go to college and all those things. So I think that was one thing, just not being from San Francisco and having gone into the Catholic school system in San Francisco, that was a big adjustment, and just understanding the dynamics of that, which now I like really appreciate, and it's a ton of fun and I really respect and like enjoy it. And I kind of know the ins and outs of it now, but that was one thing that was just so different from MA, where it's like MA Woodside, you know, were rivals for years, but that's kind of just, you know, a district rivalry.
Sure.
And I think just, you know, like, I think there's great camaraderie in the league. I think it's great coaches. I think everyone takes care of each other in a great way. And, you know, I really appreciate my time in the PAL. I think the WCL just got, it's a little bit smaller and it's got a little bit more of a older tradition feel, right? Like, you go into a meeting and Patrick Walsh has been there for 20 years. Coach, you know, Machado has been there for 25. Yeah. And I mean, you know, Coach Calcagno has been there for a really long time. You got a lot of guys that have put in a lot of time at those schools that, you know, have seen a lot of change. And, you know, the way that, you know, they'll talk about how football was in the WCL when they first started to now, and the way that things have evolved and changed. It's a really cool perspective to be able to hear, but I really appreciate actually being at one of the city schools, just because I think it's just so unique. Like, Chris, I don't even know how to explain it, man. Like, you got dudes that like graduated in their like 60s and 70s that are still like talking trash to some alum from SI that they're best friends with because they went to grammar school together and went to different high schools. You know what I mean? Right. Like, it's pretty cool seeing that.
So talk about like your first year. I think you won your first WCAL game.
Yeah.
I was there, yeah. I believe. And so happy for you, just because I know, just like, you guys really wanted that one for sure. It happened to be the school that employs me, but I was still happy for my friend regardless. Like,
yeah.
So tell me about like that first year. What were some of the roadblocks and hiccups? And obviously you had a little bit of success early on, so I think that helps you steamroll into the next season.
I mean, we won that one and then lost the rest, but
right.
I got the job late, right? Like, I mean, end of February, I get hired. So it's basically you have March and April, and then like you're in spring ball in May, you know? So like, we didn't have a lot of time, and the morale was in a really bad place, right? Like, kids were not showing up to lift weights. Like, we're not very excited to play football.
And real quick, because I want you to continue this, but I need to double tap on that. What did you do, or how did you get them to want to come to workouts when the consistency wasn't already there?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'll tell you what we did the first day. So the first day I got introduced to the team, I brought a whiteboard with me. So we were in the school theater. So all the football players were there. And so I split the whiteboard into three columns. And so we started off in the left column, and I have my back to them, right? And I'm like setting this up on the whiteboard, and I say, okay, we're going to go on the far left here. I want you guys to tell me everything that's wrong with the program. There's no judgment. I just got here. I was like, you know, there's some administrators in here, whatever. I was like, I want you guys to tell me what's wrong with Reardon football right now. Chris, I turn around from the whiteboard, there's like 25 hands up. And they're going through everything. Like, we don't take school seriously. We show up late. Guys don't practice hard. Guys don't even show up to practice. No one knows the plays. Guys don't want to work hard. We quit during games. Mental tough. I mean, they were so brutally honest. And it's one of those things where, like, I feel like if you give kids a platform, like, they know. They're not oblivious to it, right? Like, they know. And I think it was good for them to be able to have the opportunity to just let that out, right? And I was like, okay, right? Well, we wrote all this down. I said, okay, like, let's go in the middle column. Now, where do you want to go with this program? Like, where do we want to be? And the really cool thing that I don't think, like, coaches always give their players a chance to, is, like, they started talking about their academic goals. They started talking about behavior stuff on campus. It wasn't all just like, we want to win a state title and that's it, right? Now, did they put that on there? Yeah, they did. But, like, it was so much more than that. And then it was like, all right, on the right side, how do we do it? Okay, this is what you're saying is wrong. This is where you're saying you want to go. What's the bridge between the two, right? And so we started listing off all the things. And so I said, look, guys, this has nothing to do with me. I'm a new coach, and that's here, and I'm going to hold you guys to this. But you guys understand what you need to do. The bridge that we're talking about here and how we close the gap and get to where we want to go, you guys are the ones that just came up with this. Why aren't you doing it? Why aren't you holding each other to the standard? Right. And that first day, our strength and conditioning coach told me we had four kids showing up to workouts consistently. And I said, do you say four or 40? He said four. That first day, we had 35 kids show up. And by the next week, we were at 60. And so, like, I think they just needed to be empowered and have an opportunity to be able to buy into something. And we had created a leadership council. We had them vote for leaders. I let them come up with the team rules. So I said, okay, guy misses a workout. What do we do? Okay. And that's why I brought it to them. And I said, I didn't come up with this. You guys did. Right. And I think empowering them to be able to make that culture change, I think, was a really big thing. And, you know, we had our ups and downs. We had times where it was really hard for us to get out of our own way. And you know, when things weren't going well, how to deal with adversity. Guys really knowing what hard work means because they were being pushed in a way that they hadn't been pushed before. But we were really young last year and we took our lumps, but it set the stage for us to have the type of culture we have now where, you know, we really are a family. It really is about the brotherhood. Everyone takes care of one another. We truly do what we love in our hearts. Like, no one puts each other down. We know how to deal with adversity because we believe in one another and we've done the work. But I really think that first, like, week or two, and then the big thing is being willing to stick with what you said, right? Like, I suspended some seniors and they didn't play in our second game, right? They weren't doing the right things. There were some guys that, you know, like, ended up being taken off the leadership council because they didn't do the right things. I think the kids realized in that moment, like, oh, like, we're not just about to talk, like, we're going to be about this, right? I think a lot of times you'll come in and talk about, hey, we're going to do X, Y, Z, but if you're not willing to stay true to your principles and the things that you're saying to the kids, then they're not going to believe in what you're saying, right? And so we had to hold true to that. And that included taking some of our best players off the field, right? But I think that's the big thing in terms of the culture change and that first year and kind of your original question on, like, what was it like? I mean, the whole focus was on culture. And Chris Peterson, who was a huge influence on me, the former Boise State and Washington coach, he did this study about culture change in organizations, not just like sports teams. And he says it takes 12 to 18 months It takes 12 to 18 months to fully change the culture of any organization. Like, it's not going to happen in 6 months. It takes 12 to 18 months for that to fully be fully bought in top down with every person in your program. And so we just kept chipping away. Right. And we're going to hit that 18 month mark here at the end of this season. I feel like we're really setting ourselves up for a lot of success here in the future.
That's great. First and foremost, because you're not going to make anybody do anything. They're going to have to want to do it themselves. Like I asked the previous coach, like, how did you get them to do it? Similar type of mantra as far as asking them what their goals are and then, you know, holding them accountable for those goals. Oh, I want to play Division I. Well, if your habits aren't Division I habits, you are not going to go Division I. Secondly, if you don't have Division I talent, size, or ability, you are not going to go D1. So you have to have measurable goals that are specific to you, but also achievable as well. You know, the SMART goals. But when things got difficult last year, obviously you won one WCAL game. You were very competitive in most of the games, but when things were difficult, how did you hold that thing together? Because that's when some things can start to slide, because you come in, we're talking this and doing this and we're holding people accountable, and then they don't. First of all, it is working, but it's not working on the timeline that they may have in their head. Mm-hmm. And you know that if they just stick with it, they just get through this mud real quick. Cool. We got, you know, smoother roads ahead if we can do that. What was it like in those tense, hard moments? Because I know they came. They come to everybody, even the best teams. We know they have them.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, we had a stretch there in the middle of the season where we had like Sarah, St. Francis back-to-back. We have a ton of injuries. Like, we're barely
Which I did check the schedule. You have that again this year.
We do have that again coming up in a couple of weeks. But, I mean, that was tough. I mean, we got Sarah running clocked us. And St. Francis, you know, I think it was like 35-0 or something like that. And, I mean, St. Francis, we literally had one healthy running back that game, you know. We have our program. We kind of split it up. We talk about developments. We have our Built for Life program and then like our football development. And Built for Life is sort of like our way of teaching our guys how to be successful in life and deal with situations and academically be successful. And one of the things that we did last year was we read this book, Pound the Stone. And it's this whole concept of stone cutters could swing 100 times on a stone and it doesn't break, but it could be the 101st swing that breaks the stone. And so our thing to the kids was, you know, just keep swinging, keep pounding the stone, right? Like, you never know, like, what if I told you that this next swing would be the one to break the stone? Would you stop, right? And don't focus on the scores. Don't focus on, you know, anything, but keep swinging every single day and finding ways to get better. And so pound the stone was really like our big mantra the whole year. And, you know, look, like, we lost two really close games at the end of the year that, you know, ended up keeping us out of playoffs to our city rivals. And, you know, that was really hard for the kids, but the way that we were able to keep them going, to keep coming to practice, to keep, you know, wanting to give us everything they had on game day was, you know, continuing to just build the foundation of our culture. And like the thing we just kept preaching was, you know, keep pounding the stone, right? Like, it will break at some point.
I love that. I love that a lot, actually. And so then you fast forward, you go through, you know, what you went through. You have a good off season. I mean, I was there when we played Reardon last year. You were there supporting the girls basketball team. And so was your boys varsity coach, Joey, who I've had on the podcast before too. And you were just around. I was like, what's up, man? He's like, oh, I got an office here. I work remotely. And I'm like, wow, that's awesome. And then you get, well, how many transfers did you guys get this year?
Let's see. We had the Tofi brothers, Chris, Judge, Peter, Sinai. I think that's it. I think it was like six or seven.
Okay. So, yeah. Some people would say it was like 11, 21, whatever. You read a whole bunch of stuff. I know you don't care about that stuff, but to me, it's like, all right, well, first and foremost, is he a good coach? Yep. Damn good coach. Is he a good man? Absolutely. Is there opportunity to go there and play? Absolutely. And can he move me on if I want to go on to play? All four of those things, yes. And the biggest one is, are you breaking any rules? No. it's okay for kids to transfer, just like Coach Prime. I would say you're a disruptor in this regard. You have changed. First of all, you don't look like the other coaches in the league. You don't talk like the other coaches in the league. They don't have the relationships, in my opinion, with, you know, the young kids. I'm sure they have great relationships. I don't want to say anything bad about any of the coaches in the league, because they have all had a lot of success. Even the new ones that have just joined the league, and they'll find out, you know, the camaraderie and all that. But I think that if somebody wants to go to your school because you're there, they have every opportunity, as long as there's no rules being broken. And I love that for you, because you have changed something. Just because it looks different don't mean it ain't good, because if somebody were, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on, is so they can understand the man. All right. And it's not 20 transfers. Okay. It's 6 or 7, like you mentioned. So talk about that, and talk about whatever that means, basically.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, obviously I hear all the rumors, everything to, like, we pay players, which, you know, I wish, you know, Barry a living doesn't really allow you to spend extra income on paying high school kids.
Sure. So,
you know, I've heard all types of things that, you know, we moved families and all types of stuff. And, you know, I find it actually pretty funny, to be honest with you. I think it's a lot of people who just don't understand how the world works. Like, I think there's two pieces to it. I think one, like, you know, the section looked into everything. Obviously, you know, they cleared the guys, and, you know, we didn't break any rules. You know, these were kids that a lot of people, I don't think, realize their ties to Reardon previously, or their ties to, you know, some of these kids were going to Reardon basketball camps since they were, you know, in fifth, sixth grade. And there's guys here that applied to Reardon as middle schoolers. I mean, some of the stuff predates even me, right?
My senior year, I played against John Tuffy.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no. I mean,
him and Marquise Catley.
Yeah, I mean, that was that's a legendary Reardon team right there.
Absolutely, yeah.
Both those guys went in the Hall of Fame earlier this year. Well deserved, and I think, you know, Reardon's always had a lot of transfers too. I think that's the other part that people don't realize. Like, you know, John Tofi was a transfer to Reardon. You know, I think just for years Reardon had always struggled with its enrollment, and so it had to take transfers. So there's kind of a big transfer culture with the school. And so, you know, I think that's one part. I think the second thing was, you know, we were young, and I think people knew that we were going to be good, and they saw the opportunities our kids were getting to play at the next level. But more importantly, I think people, like, don't realize that Reardon's, like, the fastest growing private school in the Bay Area, right? Like, if you ask Chris Lawson, when he took a visit to Reardon and shadowed and came to see the school, like, the thing that he liked the most was our engineering program. I mean, cause he wants to study engineering. Right. And that was something that was really important to him. And, you know, I think a lot of people just view him as a really good football player, and they don't realize that, you know, these are kids, there's other things that they're interested in outside of just football. Right. And I think sometimes we view them as these singular things, and I think that's unfair to them, frankly. And I think the last thing is just, like, you know, like, look, like, I think kids should have an opportunity to go play wherever they want to play, whether that's at Reardon or somewhere else. Like, you know, they should have an opportunity as long as it's being done the right way. And, you know, like, that's the most important thing, is you're not selling something to kids. You're not calling parents. You're not calling 7-on-7 coaches or youth coaches trying to find a way into a kid and stuff like that. Cause there's a lot of that goes on out there. And, you know, I think one of the things that people don't realize is what happens at the college level eventually makes its way to high school. And what happens in Southern California usually makes its way up to Northern California. Right. Sure. And look, kids switch. I mean, you probably know this. I'd be curious to hear your own experience with Top. Like, kids change, like, youth and club teams like crazy now. That was not something that happened before.
Yeah.
Right. Nowadays, kids change high schools frequently. That's not something that happened before. I think part of it people don't realize is, like, I think this is just kind of what high school sports is now. Right. Like, and across the board, I mean, there's a ton of public schools that have a lot of transfers. There's a lot of private schools that have transfers. For some reason, we were singled out this season. And that is what it is. You know, I don't really care. I'm here to focus on my team and my kids and giving them the opportunities that we can. But, you know, that's something that starts when these kids are young, and it's become part of the culture, right? Is that, and all, I think the other thing too, is all these guys are connected now on social media. Like, they want to play together. like, that's a really foreign thing to me. Like, when we were in high school, Chris, it's like, no, like, these are my guys. I don't want to play with you. Like, I'm going to go with my kids that I grew up with, like, on my team, and we're going to go compete against you and try and beat you. Nowadays, kids are a little different, right? They go up wanting to play with one another, and, like, you know, the club stuff being so year-round, like, you know, they talk about, hey, we got to get a really good group together so that we can win in high school and we can get college opportunities. So the calculus is just different, and I think I've seen that change just in my time coaching in the last, like, 12 years.
For sure. And truth be told, I'm doing it with my kid right now. My kid's playing up a few grades for basketball, but we have all these kids that go to school together, and we have them on a basketball team. And now we're going into another league, and we've got them all on the same basketball team, and we want them to play football together. We want them to play baseball together. And that's what you do. I mean, Taff, my buddy, you know, Taff, obviously, I think that's one of the mutual connections that we had. His kids are doing the same thing, and he's coaching Top Flight right now for his son, and it's all of his friends, you know, and that's kind of what it is now. And, you know, you want to play with the best, and sometimes you want to play with the older kids. Like, my kid's playing up. He's going to be playing up his whole life. Mm-hmm. Like, he's playing with 7 and 8 year olds, and he's 5, but he can keep up for right now. If he can't keep up, then obviously I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
But the other thing that you mentioned, and I don't want this to go unnoticed, is you guys are the fastest growing. And that is because you just added girls 3 years ago, and you didn't have to hire any extra personnel as far as teachers go. It's the same faculty amount, but now there's an influx of more resources because there's more students. And in turn, that may, you know, make it a little bit more attractive for people to want to go there and things like that. So
we actually asked our freshman class. It was interesting. Like, we asked the freshman football team, our admissions department, more out of curiosity. And I think, like, it was like probably like 40-50% of the team said they wouldn't have come to Reardon if it was still all boys. So, I mean, that's, you know, it's an interesting data point right there. And, like, us merging with Mercy, when the girls came in, they actually were the ones that brought the biomedical sciences program and engineering programs, because that was at Mercy already. Right? And so you see those things all coming together, right? Our boarding program, right? Like, you know, hoops wise, I think we have like one or two kids maybe that stay in the dorms off the top of my head. But football, like, we don't have, or, well, we do, but we have like a receiver on the JV team that's from Japan. Our JV kicker is from Spain. So, you know, we have this like really cool experience too, where like the kids at our school get a chance to like go to class with someone who has a totally different life experience and the way they grew up than you. And there's a lot of really cool things about Reardon that make it really appealing. And again, like, we're very, very, very diverse of a school, which is really rare for private schools in the Bay Area, right? And so I think all of those things together, it's made it a really attractive school. I mean, we're breaking records for applications this past year. This year, we're off to a super fast start. So, I mean, I think there's a lot out there that I just don't think people know about Reardon either, right?
For sure. Well, this is a fun fact. I've now had 3 Reardon head coaches. I had Will Watkins, I had Joey Curtin, and now you. That's a record. I haven't had that many head coaches from the same school. So
yeah, those guys are doing a great job. I mean, Will's kind of in this unique position of like, I mean, that program was started from scratch basically, right? Like, the girls come in and they just joined the WCL, and he's doing a fantastic job. Great guy. Joey, obviously, I mean, you know, he's one of the best coaches around in the hoop scene. I mean, you know, his record speaks for himself, but just being an alum of the school and you know, what he gives back. I mean, I just had Joey come talk to our team yesterday. And so again, I mean, I think just the community and like, you know, the fact that Joey's willing to come talk to the football team, because I asked him, like, we have our own like really cool sense of culture and family within Reardon also, that I think's really cool.
Yep. What was the, so I know the book that you read, but what was the mantra that you guys used?
Pound the stone.
Pound the stone. And then something for life. What was that?
Oh, Built for Life. So
Built
for Life is actually something I got from Chris Peterson when he was at Washington. And so like, it's really just our whole thing around how do we make you being in the best version of yourself? That's academically, that's personally, that's mindset. And so David Lynn, one of our counselors who was one of our freshman coaches last year, he also runs our boarding program, has a mindset group that he's created at Reardon called Why Not Mentality. And so he actually runs our Built for Life program. And so we do everything from case studies to teaching it like a curriculum around certain subjects. It's a big part of what we are as a program. It's probably, honestly, it's like my favorite part of coaching is Built for Life. Like X's and O's stuff is fun, but like being able to dive into that with the kids is really cool. And like, it's something that we started at MA, and it's something that's really big to me. And CSM, College San Mateo, where I coached in between, has it. And so we've brought that.
So is it a separate program, or is it a curriculum that Peterson put together, or?
It's something that we've put together, actually. Yeah. So the structure of the program, somewhat similar to what Coach Pete did, but we've kind of put our own like personalized framework to it. And we kind of pick the things that we think our kids really need. And you know, like we'll even do things where we'll just talk about stuff. Like sometimes it's even literally something that I've read, right? It could be something that I read and I just talk, you know, hey, like, you know, here's something that I saw, or we'll share stuff even with the kids. And then, you know, like we play on a Saturday, like Friday after school, we actually build in time. We'll not just like watch film and do a walkthrough practice. Like we'll actually set up 45 minutes for us to do Built for Life as a team. And then one thing that we started this spring that we did a couple times to test out was, I actually got this from Georgia football. We call them skull sessions, but we basically would finish our lifts. And then we would take 15 minutes to do a case study on something. Like we'd show them a quick, like 3-minute video, that we would get off of YouTube. Like, you know, Michael Jordan from The Last Dance talking about leadership. Right. And then we talk about it as a team for like 10, 12 minutes, and then we'd cut them loose. But it's kind of a constant thing that we're always looking at ways to help our kids be the best version of themselves. That's really important to us. That's really what we're about as a program. So we built it into our program.
I love that. We do something similar. We watch a video, a short video every single day. It could be, and I'm trying to get more females, but it's hard to find a lot of female motivational stuff. But Dawn Staley and Becky Hammon and Cara Lawson, they have a bunch. So like on Twitter, if I see one of these things, I just bookmark it, and then I have all these bookmarks. I'll share it with you. I'll share it with you. And so it's like, you know, most of them are no more than 3 minutes, but some of them are longer. And I just clip one because now you can also clip on YouTube. So Coach Prime was talking to the Philadelphia 76ers. Nick Nurse brought his team out there. The team's owner, also his daughter, goes to Boulder. So they were running their training camp out there, and Coach Prime just sat there and spitballed with the guys, and they were asking him like questions. They're all professional athletes, but they're all asking him certain questions like, oh, what did you guys do in practice? He's like, practice was everything. I went every day. I was a dog. He was a dog. And we were all, you know how Coach Prime is. Yeah. So, and then one of the things was, he was talking about being late, you know, on time is late. Early is on time. So if he's going to start his meeting 15 minutes early, if it's 7 o'clock, he started at 6:45, and his son, Shiloh, was late. Mm-hmm. And so he didn't start him in the game. Now he said, if it was Shador, he did say if it was Shador. Yeah, if it was Shador, I don't know if I would have did it, but he was saying it in jest. But yeah, so we do something similar, but I just like the way that you phrase that, because we do talk about life lessons. And one of the things that we talk about specifically is being on time or being prepared. You're expected to be prepared. If you are not, if you're in the gym and we start at 7, well, everything needs to be on, and you need to probably be out there getting some shots up. There's a reason why Curry is Curry. He's there hours before preparing, whether it be for a practice or a game, just to get your body ready. I mean, our whole staff is playing in a men's league right now, and mm-hmm. Like we get there early because we need to stretch. We need to shoot. Like it doesn't work like that. And we're trying to get, and we have a very, very young team this year with only one senior. So similar to where you guys were at last year. And so a lot of this is selfish questioning, because I want to see, you know, this is kind of a change of the guard. We've always been kind of senior heavy every single year. And this, ironically, this was the freshman COVID year. So we lost a lot of kids that didn't stop playing basketball or couldn't afford the school any longer and had to go to another school, things like that. So a lot of things have changed in a short period of time, or kids that were planning on coming, then COVID hit and now they're not going to come. Right. So I'm definitely picking your brain about all that stuff. Yeah. I just think that's the reason why we have these sort of conversations, because we're all kind of going through similar things. And we all know that something's going to come, because you're dealing with so many people. I told our men's coach today, our boys coach, Colin, I was like, man, it would be so easy if we just had to coach basketball. It would be so easy. Like, that part to me is easy. We haven't even talked about like schematics of what you do and stuff like that. But that to me is like the biggest thing, coaching people and making sure that we're all on the same page. Because if I'm late one day, I'm letting you down. Like, we had to have the conversation that, because we're doing strength and conditioning and weight, stuff like that, and we got people showing up late. Like, that ain't it. We can't do that. That's not how things are done. Like, our whole mantra for the school is quest for excellence. Mm-hmm. Does that look like it's excellent? No, it's not. We cannot show up late or unprepared. And so these mantras and things that you guys are doing in your program, like, it's mental notes, and I'll go back and take my own notes on it too.
I'm always finding for like a fresh, like, one thing I'll say, it's interesting you're talking about the X's and O's piece, right? Like, you can win so many different ways, but in the end, you can't cheat doing things the right way. And some people will just look at a team sometimes and be like, oh, they're super talented. And like, I wish I could coach a team like that. Right. But they don't realize that, like, all the stuff that goes into it. Maybe it's just those kids really love playing that hard for that coach. Right. Or maybe that team really, like, there's a ton of stuff behind the scenes that you don't see that they have to do with one another to help support them, even though they have natural talent. Likewise, there are other teams that don't have a ton of talent, but man, they're so disciplined. They execute really well. They play super hard for one another. You can win in so many different styles. But in the end, I think, like, staying true to the process and like having a team that collectively plays for one another, that has coaches that they play for, coaches that are willing to trust their kids or build that type of environment and culture, I think that's the unique thread that you see through anyone who's successful. And that's why I'm always looking for those types of coaches, where it's like, you could pick their brain for the one or two things out of it that, like, well,
and most of the time we don't give the coach enough credit, because the coach is that dude.
Exactly. Like,
you can look at Urban Meyer. Did he win at Utah? Yep. Did he win at Florida? Yep. Did he win at Ohio State? Yep. Kirby Smart, same thing. Georgia was a good program, but it didn't get to the national prominence until he got there. Yep. Alabama, same thing. It's had a lot of great success, but at the same time, when Nick finally got that thing rolling, that's when things changed. When Coach Prime went to JSU, was he like that? He was. And that's what changed. That was what it was. It was the dynamics of what they are bringing to the table. And you want to look at basketball. Okay. When Phil Jackson got to the Lakers, that's when Kobe and Shaq finally won. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, they didn't. Stan Van Gundy was the head coach of the Miami Heat with Dwayne Wade and Shaq. Well, he got fired and Pat Riley had to take over, and that's when they got the championship. And similar things when Pat Riley took over for Westhead, I believe his name, back in the 80s. Like, he didn't have them. And then Pat Riley goes on to do his thing. And then even here in the Bay Area, Mark Jackson, great guy, great analyst. But they needed Steve Kerr to unlock everything. Did Mark start it? Yeah, he should get a ring if he hasn't gotten one, because of the preparation that he put in place. But at the end of the day, he didn't get the job done, and he had those same guys. And they get a new voice that very first year. You see the difference. And similar to you, like, all right, you had some success in the first year, not the success you wanted, but the success you needed to build that building block for this year. And who knows, you know, right now you guys are at the top of the WCAL with a couple of big games ahead. And I know the two main ones, obviously, I know as a coach, you're not going to be like, oh, we're not looking past Bellarmine and blah, blah, blah. But the two big ones are going to happen back to back in a few weeks. With Sarah and St. Francis. So, yeah, I just think that, like you said, the right place at the right time with the right amount of energy. And then those kids play hard for those coaches.
Yeah. I want to circle. Actually, I was circling back to like what you were talking about being early and the preparation and stuff. Yeah. It's actually really interesting you say that, because so we only have 3 team rules. Like, I let the kids come up with the team rules in terms of like, okay, if you are missing assignments in class, this is the punishment. You show up late to practice, this is the punishment, right? So letting them at least set a standard of what the expectations and the behavior being very clear. But in terms of me, I see coaches that come in sometimes, they have like an entire handbook of rules, or they have an entire poster. And I just think that's really hard for kids to know. So I only have 3 team rules, right? Be early, make good decisions, finish everything.
Sure. That's it,
right? And on the be early part, I think like the thing that we always preach to the kids is like, if you're early to something, it matters to you. Right? It shows that you care. And so that first period class that you show up late to, you're showing the teacher that you don't care about their class. Right. When you show up late to weights, you're showing me that you don't care about this. Mm. Right? It's just like anything else in life, right? When if you're supposed to be somewhere and you care, you're going to be there early, you're going to be prepared, and you're going to be ready to go. Right? And I think like the one thing I always say to the parents too is like, it's crazy to me that you have a phone that you guys are all addicted to and stuck on that literally has the time on it, and you're incapable of being on time and things. And I think right now, this generation, not to be like, you know, me and you being like the two millennials just complaining about Gen Z on this podcast, but like, it's one of those things where it's like those things feel almost optional to them sometimes.
True.
Because, you know, it's like, I feel like when you and I were in high school, if we were late, there was repercussions for it. Now I feel like a lot of times if you're late, it's like, okay, well, don't do that again. Okay. Like, we have mediation to talk about, like, why do you feel like you're being late, rather than no, like there's an expectation, like you need to be late or you need to be on time, and like teaching them why being early matters, right? Like not walking in the door at 7:59 and 59 seconds, but being there at 7:55, get your notebook out, have your notes, review it. If you have a question, go ask your teacher, be ready to go right at 8:00. And I think like that's where us as coaches and sports, like this generation needs it more than ever, frankly. And I think just learning that sense of discipline and then eventually like the grit that comes from sports is something that's going to really like help them in life. Cause I see it in the tech world, Chris, like this generation coming out.
Yeah.
They're super smart.
Yeah.
They're so technically inclined because they just grew up with it.
Right.
And they're really passionate about technology. They really, really struggle socially, and they really struggle with just having grit and toughness and dealing with the day-to-day of life, right? Like,
yeah,
it's hard for them to think of the fact that I have to work 9 to 5, 5 days a week. Like, that's hard to them.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think like more than ever, they need us to help instill this stuff in them to be successful in life, because the world doesn't care.
No, they don't.
Right.
And what you talk about the time, when I give you my time, that is the most valuable asset that we all have, because we have a finite amount of time that we don't know when that final second that we're going to have on this earth. But if I give you my time and you don't value my time, like you said, you basically don't give a darn. Mm-hmm. And, you know, specifically for me, I know, probably know that my mom passed away a few months ago, but time is the most valuable asset that we have. And I was talking to my grandmother, who lost her daughter a few months back, my mom, and she said it to me like this, like, and this was the time I was having like a bad day or whatever. She said, Chris, she didn't use these words, but she said, Chris, your mom's not coming back. And you need to move on. This is coming from her mother. Mm-hmm. Like, and I was like, whoa. And she was like, Chris, you got so much to be thankful for. You need to be thankful for that. You lost a piece of you. There's this big puzzle of your life. You lost a piece of it. You didn't lose all of it. You didn't lose all of it. And you better be thankful. Now, this is, you know, hard times make for hard people. She was born in 1930. So right after the Great Depression. And, you know, into, she's seen every part of technology. She has an iPhone right now. I could text her right now and she'll respond. But this is somebody that has adapted because she went through a lot of hard shit, like a lot, to get to where she is now. And like you mentioned, these kids with, and we are a part of it too. Technology has really made our life so much easier. Like right now, we can have this conversation. You're in San Francisco, I'm in San Jose, and we can literally be across from each other. Just like, we can't reach out and touch each other, but we can feel each other. We can feel the energy that we have and this conversation that is going on. And so a lot of things have been made easier because of that. But that has also made the way we cope with certain things that come a lot more difficult when they do. And you just hit it on the head, my brother. It was like, no, they need us. Like, there's a lot of kids that want to give up, like when this, when it gets real hard. And that is when they need to say, no, I need to continue to knock at that rock one more time, one more time, one more time. And yeah, you hit the nail right on the head.
Yeah. I mean, first, Chris, I actually didn't know that. No. So my condolences and obviously thoughts and prayers, and just know, you know, you got a lot of people who care about you. Your mom raised one hell of a kid and you, and I know she's going to live on and your children and what you've done. So just want to make sure I take time to say that, because, you know, I didn't know that. And so, you know, I'm appreciative to be able to share in that moment with you. And just, I think you really spoke a truth in that too. And just hearing you talk a little bit, like, I think this generation too is a little bit separated from, like, my family, the immigrant story, right? You're talking about what your grandma went through and what your mom had to go through growing up, right? And the things that were instilled into us. And now this next generation is a generation removed from that.
Right.
And so I think some of that has been lost a little bit. And also just our parents wanted to give us everything to not have to go through the things that they did. And in a way, I think that also has now, they're much more comfortable because they've been separated from that, right? But the world doesn't work that way. You and I know that now that we're adults, right? I mean, it's a cold, ruthless place. And I try to tell the kids that, not in a way that's like ruining a fairy tale for them, but like, you guys need to be prepared for the harsh realities of what's out there and what's going to happen, right? And I really believe this. Like, I really think sports is kind of like the last thing to really help these kids understand that, right? Because they get, you know, I've been a manager in tech and I have new grad PMs, and I've had a couple that have been awesome that like been through some really hard times. Like, you know, I remember there was this girl that worked for me at Dropbox, brilliant, right? She went to, you know, the New York State schools and the SUNY system, and her family were immigrants from Africa, and he was like the oldest of like four or five kids living in an apartment out of Harlem. Brilliant. But she had grit because of the way that she grew up. She was tough and she was so smart. Like, she's going to be a rock star in tech. She works at LinkedIn now. Like, but there was other PMs that like I mentored, or I'd be talking to my friends who were managers of other teams. And it's like, you know, they'd have people on their team that were new grad PMs that would break down crying because they're like, I didn't realize working was so hard. Right, that are actually in tears. And it's like, you're getting paid like really well. You're a new grad PM, you have everything in front of you. Like, and it's like, I sit there and I think about like, okay, if you're a teenager now in high school, where do you learn that outside of your home? It's sports. That's really like the one place that you're gonna get pushed in that type of manner. And I think like for us as coaches, we need to understand that. And sometimes understand the changes of this generation, of the Gen Z kids, but then also like, hey, they need us. They need us.
Those are two things that I want to make sure that we hit before we wrap it up. But one is, how do we maintain like this, the phone thing? They're attached to the phone. Like, I don't know how they have screen time of 8 hours and they were in school all day. You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't even make any sense to me. And you have practice and you had homework, but like, this was a few years back. We went down to LA as a team, and I was like, just curious, because they were on their phone the whole plane ride, the whole everywhere. Like, can I check what's your screen time looking like? And it was like 8 hours throughout the whole week, and it was like finals week the week before. And I'm like, wow. So how do we meet them where they're at? Because like, we could be like the like you said, like Dabo Swinney, he's not trying to get transfers. Well, he ain't going to win too much, you know, because the landscape has changed. Mm-hmm. And just like you said, this may be the new landscape of high school football and high school athletics in general. What's already been going on down south for 10 years is now matriculating up here. But what do we do with this? Phones are so attached to it. They're so addicted to it. I mean, sometimes I just want to take pictures in the hall and everybody's sitting there on their device. And it's like crazy. We put together this whole recess time. So every 3 days a week, there's like 40 minutes of unstructured time that the kids can do whatever they want. And they can just play on the football field or whatever the case may be, throw the football. They can play, you know, the whatever the – it's like volleyball, but I don't know. Forget the game.
Spike ball or whatever.
Spike ball. Yeah, spike ball.
Yeah.
Or walk the track or do whatever or go lift weights. And I feel that we need to figure out how to meet them where they're at, but I don't really have the answer. And then the second thing is, because I know we got to wrap here shortly, how are you able to manage coaching football with the schedule that you have, investing in all these relationships and work a full-time job? Like that's those two things I want to know before we get off.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing, like, I'd be really curious even to pick your brain, Chris. I think, like, all of us as coaches, I think we're all having this conversation right now, right? And I've seen some cool things. I've seen some coaches completely embrace it, where, like, they literally will put their playbook on a private Instagram account so their kids can look at the plays with, like, the film. They can just swipe on Instagram, and they see the play, and they see a clip of it, and then they do that every week for their new – so they literally have just embraced it and said, we're going all in on it. Some of the stuff that we've done is we literally just do like no phone time. We're like, I'll straight up like just they're lifting weights. Like we take their phone and then afterwards we'll do this. Also not allowed to have their phones and they have to talk to one another. I think the other thing too is just like we did one thing this year where we did the Crusader Olympics where we put the kids into different teams and we basically did all day Olympics ending on a barbecue where it was like team competition doing a bunch of different things. And I think you hit on one thing that like I feel like we're struggling with just across the board as coaches is like we all grew up going outside, being on the playground, getting knocked down, playing basketball with the kid that was in the grade 2 years older than you at the local park, having to learn how to bounce back from that, like the hustle of being out in the street, like just like growing up. That this generation doesn't have because they just didn't grow up that way. All their outdoor activity was structured. And sure. So part of it for us is like, all right, how do we build in the structure of outdoor activity for you, right? Outside of just lifting weights and making that like is you know hard is like, okay, like what are other things that we can do that are activities to get you guys to talk to one another, to be out and have to compete and like build some of that. And we'll literally take their phones to do it. The other thing that we've done is just, you know, I've even seen some college football programs where, like they do phone breaks. It's crazy. They'll go for 15 minutes. They'll be like, all right, 5 minute phone break. And to let the kids actually just get on their phone for 5 minutes or for a couple minutes just to like check their messages or like whatever, like go on Instagram for a second just to like get their brain to like reset. And then they'll do another 15 minutes. And that's how they'll get their 30 minutes of film in.
Yeah.
Right. So we've played with a couple different things there. And I think I don't think there's a perfect answer. I think we're all still trying to figure this out. But I do know that we as coaches are going to play a really big part in that. And that's something that like I'm always trying to find ways. You know, before we touch on the last thing, like I'd love to hear from you, Chris. Like, what are some of the stuff that you guys do with your kids?
I mean, in class, we make them put their phone in my office. So in class, if we're doing health, they put it in. They put it on my desk or. If we're going out for pee, they put it in. So they don't have it for an hour and 15 minutes in my class. You know, as far as the team goes, they don't usually do it when they're working out. But if you give them like some leisure time, they'll probably meander over there. And then like when we start practice, most of the time the phone is in the locker room. So in our team room, which is right next to the floor. So we haven't, the only times it's like issues if there's like a team event, but then like we'll stack the phones and usually I'll pay for the meal if nobody picks up their phone. But if they pick up their phone, usually, I mean, parents give them money or whatever. You got to use your own money. So if you pick up that phone for whatever reason, shoot that last text or snap or whatever they're doing. And like when we went to Sacramento Roseville for the big high school tournament over the summer. And, you know, we took the whole team, like, all right, stacked the phones, and all right, that was it. So we didn't have any issues that forced them to actually interact with one another. But, yeah, I just think, I mean, I don't know. Even their preparation, I think, is lacking because they have it, like, when they're putting their shoes on and stuff like that. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't have a right answer. Those are some of the things that we've been doing. I don't know if they work. I know it works for the I know it works for my class because that's just mandatory, but it didn't work when the kid lost his AirPods the next day. I'm like, don't you have the Find My on the, on your app? Like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but he had a new AirPods the next day. I was like, you got new AirPods? He goes, yep, I got them. I'm like, oh my gosh.
That's the other crazy thing to me is just seeing, like, I mean, these dudes, it's like, we have guys on our team. It's like they go through 3-4 sets of AirPods or the other one. This is one that's crazy. I mean, I know we're getting a little sidetracked before we answer that last question, but like, it's crazy to me that kids will like just leave their phone out charging. Like they'll be like, oh, I got to charge my phone because they use it so much. And they'll just like leave it sitting on the ground. And I'm sitting there like, do you understand? Like, that's not cheap. Like just like the entitlement of like your parents spending money to buy that for you. Like that is hundreds of dollars. Like that is,
man,
like,
they leave their stuff all over the campus. Like they'll leave their shoe bag with all their stuff. Oh, but my bag is gone. Yeah, you left it by yourself all day.
Yeah, I mean, I literally the other day, Chris, I just went in the locker room and I just straight up started just like anybody who left their stuff unlocked or out. I just basically robbed the whole team and went out to the field and said, I just made like $6,000 off you guys. And now everything's locked away and they put all their stuff away and they learn their lesson.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, it that's crazy to me though. It's like the thing that's like their most prized possession and then the way they treat it is just, yeah. Anyway, yeah. That's another thing that has bothered me lately.
Yeah. So second to last question, how are you able to work a full-time job as well as coach football? Like it's
I won't say it's easy. It's more of a sacrifice of something that I'm passionate about and brings me a lot of fulfillment.
And does your job know you coach?
They do. Yeah, I'm very open and honest with all of my employers that I've had. So I actually work East Coast hours. So I work 7 to 3-ish. Then I'll go coach football, usually log back on to get some more work done before I come home. But you know, there's definitely, you know, I'm up at 5:45. So, that, you know, if I need to be online or in the office a couple of days a week at by 7, I can do that. And then, you know, usually try to stretch the hours as much as I can while still getting some sleep at night. But, you know, when you're passionate about something and especially the reward you see, it's not wins and losses. When you see the kids grow and develop or maybe get opportunities to go play at the next level or a kid that's struggling in a class that ends up doing really well and you see him go off to college, like those things are the things that like, I think make it worthwhile and the reasons that why we do this, right? And then you see them be great husbands, great fathers in the future. That's the stuff that I think like is the drive behind it. And I said this earlier, like for me, like it's a huge, like coaching is my service aspect to others. Like I always wanted to know what that was going to be in my life. And I just found it in coaching. And, you know, it takes a lot of personal sacrifice. I won't lie. There's a lot of long days and hours and, you know, some of the other coaches are teachers and they have a prep class and they can spend some of that time to work on football. My time's in the evenings. That's really what I have to kind of do. But you know, I found a way to make it work just, you know, by my schedule and flexibility with the people that I've had an opportunity to work for. And, you know, again, I think it's just when you're really passionate about something and you love something, like you'll find ways to make it work. And I've managed to do that. So
no doubt. Another record. I think this is the longest podcast we've had, but it's been a great conversation. The last question, before we do that, anything that you want to plug right now, Coach Prime Adir?
I need to get an Ain't Hard to Find shirt for the next time I'm on. But nothing to plug.
If you win league, you definitely got to get that.
nothing to plug. Just really appreciative of the opportunity, Chris. And, you know, if there's anything to plug, just, hey, you know, I know there's a lot going on out there, you know, a lot of club teams, a lot of different opportunities. But, you know, if you're listening to this, like, you know, Chris, you and Giles and all those guys, Top Flight, Alex, who's, you know, coach over at Bellarmine now is the head man. I got a chance to see him last year during hoop season. Like, you guys all do an awesome job over there. So definitely, if anyone's listening to this, definitely send your kids over to Top Flight if you get a chance, because you know you got a chance to be around great people. It's not forget the basketball development. So
thank you. And the final question, and stay on after the outro. But if there's somebody that needs to be on the Beyond the Bucket show, who would it be? And you have to make sure you make the connection so we can get them on.
I'll tell you, I think Tim Tulloch, the head coach at College of San Mateo, would be a fantastic one. I'm actually going to nominate my defensive coordinator, Joe Kopp. Mm-hmm. Joe's an interesting guy. So Joe works in our admissions department at Reardon, as well as the boarding program. Joe actually he played at Lewis and Clark. He coached football at Lewis and Clark and Willamette University. Okay. Before coming to Reardon, he helps run some of our Built for Life program, runs our Next Level program. Just his perspective on things, like some of the stuff he does in our Built for Life program, I think you'd really enjoy that conversation. So I'd say Tim Tulloch or Joe Kopp.
I need both of them. They sound well. I know Tim is definitely had a lot of success at CSM.
Oh, yeah.
And Joe too. I would love to meet both of them, because
I got your intros. I'll make sure we get them on.
All right. Well, thank you for joining. Here's the outro, but stay on after.
Yep. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Beyond the Buckets podcast. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and share the show with your friends. And until next time, take care.